dinging, reel, swinging, shield, clinging, superhero. They're the latest, they're the greatest, ultimate superhero, the Marvel superhero.
Two sides to every story. One gets slain, one gets the glory. Till death we did not part.
Welcome to the Comic Book of the Month podcast. This week's episode is Civil War by Mark Miller, Steve McNiven, and Dexter Vines. If you care to all introduce yourselves.
I am Swan.
Nicole.
Chris.
Key.
And I'm Dylan. So this quick little shout out to our inadvertent sponsors, Two Cats Comics, TwoCatComicBookStore.com. I sure as hell hope I got that right. Since Corey's not here to correct me, that's what it is.
Should we even be sponsoring it if he's not here?
You know, I figure you can buy the book there, and he was sponsoring it last time. So, okay. And you can still buy the book there, yada yada. Anyways, all right, so let's dig into Civil War, shall we?
Well, first off, what side was everyone on?
Cap.
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 Yeah.
Okay, this is gonna be a really
we're really gonna be arguing about stuff tonight.
You sure as hell know it.
Well, it's nice to show at least a little bit of solidarity at the beginning. Because I know where you're gonna take this discussion. Air quotes.
Alright, so basic plot synopsis. There's a large-scale event that happens in a small suburban community where a bunch of low-grade superheroes try to stop a bunch of higher-grade supervillains.
For the worst of reasons.
And it kind of goes wrong, and they wind up blowing up a small town. And so because of that, the government decides to push forward an initiative to have superheroes register. And from there, wacky hijinks ensue, and the superheroes have to decide what side of registration or non-registration they are going to be on. So you see all the Marvel superheroes sort of battling against each other over the concept of registration.
I do think it's interesting, I mean, I guess just jumping into the nitty-gritty, that it's not just registration that they're fighting over, because that's something that they talk about in a lot of other comic books of registration and, like, how dangerous superheroes or villains can be, but it's this concept of, like, not only registering yourself, but, like, working for the government and becoming, like, glorified, like, FBI cops, whatever you want to call them, and just this concept of the difference between being a superhero on your own terms and being a hero getting paid and, you know, working for the government.
Super cop.
Super cop, yes.
So playing the role as the historian, it's been a long-standing tradition in comics, especially Marvel comics, to have heroes fighting each other. Going all the way back to the Golden Age of the 40s with the original Human Torch and Submariner.
Which is why they reference the 40s a lot.
Yeah.
In the book.
That's been a staple of Marvel comics since forever. Usually it's caused by a misunderstanding.
Which leads to friendship.
Or some manipulation by a villain, which leads to a classic team-up. And in the 70s and 80s, two popular books were Marvel Team-Up with Spider-Man meeting everyone, and Marvel 2-in-1 with The Thing, of all characters, meeting everyone. Those were the two big team-up books for a really long run. And so Civil War is very distinctive, where it's the first time that you've got your Marvel heroes that you know and love fighting each other over an ideal. And the ideal is whether to register, which also means putting their secret identities on file with the government, and you know how safe that is. And
normally it'd be very safe, but in the Marvel universe, that's like emailing Dr. Doom and saying, "Hey, here's my name and address. Stop by for tea sometime.
Please give it to Sandman so he can murder my ride."
Exactly, and or not registering, because that's the whole point.
Of a secret identity.
Of a secret identity is that you have loved ones and you want to be able to take off your mask and go shopping.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes without being
harassed for autographs. Or...
So, yeah, so this, it ramped up fairly quickly, but the thing is that the altercation that happened that set this off, children died. So it was big. And so at first, the superheroes were, well, this wasn't our fault. This was the C-list heroes. You know, we didn't cause this. But it took, you know, angry parents and the public turning against the superheroes.
Well, and a nightclub crowd beating the Human Torch into a coma.
Yeah. I mean, he probably had that coming.
Yes.
It's a long-standing fact that the Human Torch is a douche.
A nice one.
Yeah.
It's a flaming douche, actually. It had never been taken to this level before, Civil War, where, you know, they were fighting for their very existence as superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what made it an event!
Mm-hmm.
Like no other.
Yeah, but it's also, I mean, you know, to kind of put it into sort of a weird context in terms of sort of where it sits in the publication space, in comic books you wind up with summer blockbusters, or at least the equivalent of, where you get an event that's sort of 7 issues. DC doesn't do them as often as Marvel, but Marvel has often used these sort of events as tent poles for their year to get as many new readers to come in and sort of try out the Marvel Universe and see kind of what they have to offer, stick with the 7 issues, and then go, oh, that's kind of cool. Maybe I'll go read Doctor Strange's book, because his stuff was pretty fun. Or, oh, I really like Captain America, I'll go read Captain America, since I just read about him in Civil War. So this is kind of one of those moments where they're hoping people will dive in, see the Marvel Universe, and branch out from there. So this is sort of the first Civil War podcast. We're going to cover a few other sections because this is a huge event that spans many titles. But this is sort of, to my idea, if Marvel wants this single 7 issues to be a complete story, I want to run the experiment of did it work? So, to the table, especially those that haven't read it before.
I.e. me.
Yeah. Since several other people chose to side with Iron Man and couldn't show their face at the table.
There was nothing that was overly confusing, except for maybe when they're referencing, oh, you've known him since blah, 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 and I obviously don't know what they're talking about, but I know that they're old enough friends that, you know, people should be taking sides of other people based on that. But most of the characters that were kind of the main pushers of the story were characters that I was somewhat familiar with, Tony Stark and Spider-Man and Captain America and, you know, that kind of thing, where I knew enough about them that I could kind of follow. And
did you know enough about them because of the movies, or was it through other forms of entertainment? Or through osmosis? Cultural osmosis.
Well, I don't know that much about Captain America himself.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of know the ideals that he follows. So that became a big part of me understanding the story. But Spider-Man, I watched the cartoon when I was a kid, and I only knew about Iron Man because of the movies. But I think that it gave me enough understanding of kind of their personalities to be able to understand why they're kind of making decisions that they're making. Although not really well, because some of it I felt like maybe they wouldn't necessarily make the decisions they did, but I felt like it was enough of a story. Most of it's action-y stuff, and a lot of, like, how do we get so-and-so to come to our side. I think it worked fine as kind of a standalone. Obviously, there's more going on behind the scenes as far as Tony Stark, Iron Man's motivation for what's going on, because I feel like there's something, there's other reasons besides this crazy mother who spit in his face, you know, that he's doing what he's doing, but,
Or at least he would need that.
Well,
and
you
didn't.
Would think he
mm-hmm.
would need something more than one woman who lost her child during this traumatic experience to set him off in a war against all the other people that he was you know, fighting crime with. It seems like a pretty flimsy reason for him. I mean, from what little I know of his personality per, you know, the motion pictures, he doesn't seem overly concerned about other people in the sense of, you know, if something major was happening where many people's lives were at stake, I'm sure he would definitely care. But, like, to have one woman say, you know, it's all your fault, when obviously it wasn't his fault, he had nothing to do with it, doesn't seem like that would set someone off on a giant, you know, vendetta against, you know, his friends.
Well, this was actually one of the things that got me started reading comics, actually. I first got the X-Men Civil War, which is very, very tangential.
Very, very tangential.
Oh, it's so tangential, it's just kind of there.
Had nothing to do with X-Men and had nothing to do with Civil War.
Yes.
It happened during Civil War,
it did.
Though.
And that what was important.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually got this about 5 months before I actually started buying monthly comics. And I definitely could tell that I read it several times. It was definitely compelling enough for me to get into a hobby, which I do spend, which I have been known to spend multiple $20 bills on a single Wednesday.
I haven't done that in ages.
The ending is definitely a little abrupt.
Agreed.
Like hitting a brick wall almost.
I was like, oh wait!
We
only have this many issues. Okay, we're gonna stop.
It's a brick wall made of clouds. Yeah.
And and a really stereotypical mix of emergency service personnel.
I have always thought, and it's one thing I've wanted to say since we decided on this book, it's just that, and I've told you, Dylan, several times, this by itself does not, I feel, stand alone as a story. It's like there are just parts where it jumps right into something happening with no explanation of how it got there. Case in point.
I think it's chapter 5.
Chapter 5.
Yep.
When, you know, stuff's happening, here's all the things happening throughout the Marvel Universe, and all of a sudden Spider-Man and Iron Man are fighting with no explanation as to why, when in the last issue they were allies.
But wait, at the end of issue 4, when we're at the funeral,
hey, Spider-Man's acting strangely.
Spider-Man is acting strangely, because he's gonna go against Tony Stark.
Well, how strange it must be for him to be sad at his friend's funeral.
I'm just saying.
It's just like, I don't know, it's like, Reed and Tony take that as acting strangely when he's just kind of blaming Tony, I guess. But it's like, to go from that, kind of turning a cold shoulder to him, to being in the middle of a fight, it leaves questions that are unanswered unless you read the side stories. Like Amazing Spider-Man, for instance.
Well, I mean, not to totally disagree with you, but I feel in that particular instance, they weren't really fighting, they were arguing, and Spider-Man was, get out of my way, I'm leaving and I'm joining someone else, and
It's a knockdown, drag-out fight, but I do think that superheroes would argue in that way.
But I've seen that in real life of people, like, where it just kind of, it escalates very quickly from saying a few words to a fight.
But it started with a hole in the wall.
Yeah, may I point out that the first panel of their exchange, there's a gigantic hole in the wall, as Swan just pointed out.
But
there's
you don't know if Iron Man, like, flew in that way. You don't know that.
Iron Man just crashes through a wall. Honey, I'm home!
If I were Tony Stark and I had as much money as he did, I would be flying through walls. I mean, I don't need doors. I'm Iron Man.
Well,
like,
see,
come on.
I wouldn't want to scratch the paint on my armor. I'd just use repulsor blast to blast the wall open and then fly in.
Yeah,
well,
but you might injure people.
He couldn't have done that, so...
Clearly. Maybe he's been, you know, hitting the bottle again. But fell off the wagon, did he? But...
Mayhaps.
Yeah, I just... As a whole, I love the Civil War story.
Mm-hmm.
Because all the different, you know, titles come together to form one. But I feel that this main arc by itself doesn't really hold up as a solid story. It's like, I was, you know, grabbing every bit of Civil War that I could,
mm-hmm.
and so I knew what was going on, so it wasn't until you said that we had to just focus on Civil War that I was like, oh, well, that's a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
Dylan came up with a great term. Marvel spending event. That's what this is. I don't believe that this stands up as a coherent story, and Marvel didn't really care because they knew that people were going to buy every single connected book with this story. That's what the whole point was, as
mm-hmm.
Dylan said at the top of the show.
Mm-hmm.
It was the big summer event that supposedly gets new readers into the Marvel Universe, and yeah, you could spend easily over $100 buying the Civil War tie-ins, and Marvel was banking on that. And so, yeah, the difference between Peter looks suspicious at the end of Chapter 4 and then a full knockdown drag-on fight at the beginning of Chapter 5 is because people who were reading Spider-Man would know what's going on, and they were counting on that. So I'm not saying that's a good thing or a bad thing. I'm just saying that for me, it certainly makes the main Civil War book kind of spotty as far as flow. And that's, you know, that's my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, I did buy several tie-in books, so I don't want to be a hypocrite about it.
And I read his copies.
I think that's kind of the difference, too, between someone, because, you know, someone who's already kind of in the world versus
mm-hmm.
someone who's just like, hi, I'm just kind of reading because people told me to read it.
But there are people like that?
Yes, there are. Because I'm not expecting something overly detailed. Give me the gist of the story. Let me know why these two are fighting. Let me know kind of whose alliances are with who. And that's really all I expected from this. So that's exactly what I got in this book. So I guess the reason I felt it was fine standing alone was because I wasn't expecting you to tell me why Peter Parker would be acting strangely or why he would suddenly switch sides. Because to me, you would expect something like that to happen for somebody, because they either decide that, you know, they don't want to hurt their friends, or because they feel too many of their freedoms are being taken away, or they think it's completely creepy and wrong that they're creating superheroes and you know, growing them in test tubes or cloning Thor, or, you know, any number of reasons could cause someone to change a side. So to me, I didn't care what Peter Parker's reasons were. I just knew he decided it wasn't the right fight.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I needed
yeah.
to know.
I thought that what he saw in issue 4 certainly justified what happened at the beginning of issue 5. I don't think that I necessarily needed what happened in Spider-Man to understand that moment.
I think it's nice to have it, and if you're interested in really detailed stories, I can
yeah.
understand why
mm-hmm.
this wouldn't work as a standalone, but for me, I just make up whatever reason I think is the most plausible, and I move
mm-hmm.
on, so...
Yeah, and I think...
When I started reading this, you know, those three bubbles where he's like, no, I'm leaving, this is stupid, you're going too far, that was enough for me.
Yep.
Because this, when I did read this, this was the only thing I had read, and it worked just fine.
Yeah.
Knowing that there is more stuff, you know, definitely gives it a certain richness.
Yeah, well, it makes you go, oh, you know, like I said, I really like that character. Maybe I'll go see what they were doing in their miniseries during Civil War.
It gives it more nuance, but you know, when you're thinking something so bold, I mean, we barely see any Luke Cage in here, even though
where's my Luke Cage?
In other parts, he's portrayed as being one of, you know, the biggest anti-registration guys, right behind Captain America.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't say who was on what side.
Oh yeah, yeah, probably.
And because I
think we can generally
picking up on
time.
What Nicole said. If you only know Iron Man from the movies, the Iron Man in Civil War is the polar opposite of the Robert Downey Jr. Iron Man. Whereas as he's portrayed in the film, Tony Stark would say, "No, this is my invention. The government cannot have my
mm-hmm.
armor, and I'm a free agent." Whereas the Tony Stark in Civil War was, oh, I just had a moment of clarity. Yes, we should all be more responsible. Yes, I fully back the registration of superheroes, and everyone should register and give their secret identity, because I certainly have, and you know, this is all for the greater good. And when the mother of the slain child spit in his face, he called that a moment of clarity. So Tony Stark, aka Iron Man, is pro-registration.
Mm-hmm.
And as Nicole said, as she read it, she, you know, in the back of her mind, it was like, yeah, and what
weird.
Else?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And Captain America, who you would think, being that he's a soldier, and he essentially
mm-hmm.
works for the government, even though they don't emphasize that as much as they used to.
Mm-hmm.
Cap is on the side of, no, these are civil liberties that
mm-hmm.
you can't ask me to force my friends to register if they don't want to, because we're all fighting the good fight. Why don't you just let us do what we do, and we will police ourselves?
Mm-hmm.
Which I saw that as a metaphor for the comic book industry and the comics code of the...
mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, back in the 50s, the comic book industry was like, oh, don't, we will censor ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Don't, government,
we
don't
need, we don't
yeah.
need, well, it's not, it wasn't even the government, it was a private organization that was coming in to censor comic books to prevent them from polluting the children of America by sanitizing them and removing the word zombie and horror and terror from covers and blah, 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 blah.
That's just history stuff.
Yeah.
But,
good history stuff.
Yeah. But anyway, yes, Captain America is anti-registration, and Tony Stark is pro-registration.
Mm-hmm.
They're two very prominent
mm-hmm.
Avengers. All the heroes of the Marvel Universe had to choose a side.
Mm-hmm.
So they were either behind Cap or they were behind Tony Stark.
Unless you're X-Men or...
Yeah.
X-Men got to be on the sidelines because they were already all registered, because when House of M happened and Decimation, there were only like 200 left, so they already had all the names on file.
Yeah, this whole Civil War thing is old hat for the X-Men.
Exactly. That was the funny thing, because when I was picking up Civil War, I actually... When Civil War came out, I decided to completely ignore it, and I said, screw this, I'm going to wait for all the fallout, and I'll see what... I was like, these event books don't do anything, they never change any status quo, I don't want to deal with it, I'm going to ignore it, and I'll just read it in trades down the road after the dust has settled, and I've forgotten how bad I figured it was going to be. And also the idea of the whole registration, I was like, okay, well, I've been seeing the X-Men, me being the X-Men fanboy at the table, I've been seeing the X-Men going through this over and over and over again with government registration, so this whole idea is just old hat to me, so what can they really bring to the table? And then I finally read it, and I was like, okay, well, you have the whole Marvel Universe running an analogy for the Bush administration with the Patriot Act and civil liberties and 9/11, and taking it and tying it up in this nice little 7-issue package with Captain America being the person saying, no, Americans, you should be fighting and questioning your government. And I actually kind of enjoyed it.
The government really wasn't the one who was fighting for registration as much as it was this small group of people.
Yeah.
Some of them superheroes and some of them just ordinary citizens that said to the government, no, this is what we should do. And I think that makes it feel very different than, you know, we kind of have come to expect the government to come up with these types of things and be like, oh, no, it takes away my freedoms. But when it's your own friend or someone who's already a part of that group, that minority that's having their liberties taken away, going, yes, I'm for this, let's do it, it's for everybody's good, it becomes very confusing of, like, why would you want that?
Mm-hmm.
Why would you be on the side of taking away your own rights? That doesn't make any sense. And so it's really interesting watching them go into this concept of, like, oh, it's for the greater good, You know, it's really to help make the people believe in us again, or whatever their reasonings were. But it's very interesting, this the idea of being forced to register and work for the government by your own comrades,
mm-hmm.
rather than by your, you know, the man or the government.
By some enemies, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they did make a point that this was a bill that was rushed through Congress, and so it did become a law.
Yes,
but
it wasn't started by the government.
Exactly, and the thing is that Tony Stark and Reed Richards and Hank Pym came up with other things that they wanted to I don't want to say thing.
They came up with 100 solutions for
yes.
a better planet.
Yes,
yeah.
I like that better.
Yeah.
So yeah, they came up with the idea of the interdimensional prison, which was the Guantanamo Bay metaphor there.
Yeah, it's
and
it's all giant metaphors.
The negative zone.
Giant metaphors.
And the
of course
and
I read it the first time without any of the metaphors. I just read it as
is. Yeah, exactly.
The metaphors.
Yeah.
You don't need them.
Yeah. Well, Swan, tell the audience what you came up with earlier today. With you're gonna cut this part out.
Oh yeah.
Colors.
Oh yes. Even though I've read this several times, I was flipping through and I just realized that Captain America is the liberal and his main color is blue, and Iron Man is the conservative and his color is red. So I was like, oh, of course. But also point about Captain America, he is not my country right or wrong. He has always been a believer in what America should be,
mm-hmm.
not what America is, because during the Vietnam War, he actually stopped being Captain America and was Nomad. So that's good to point out that this is definitely consistent with how Captain America deals with this dream of the government.
Unlike DC, Marvel prefers to do the soft reboot
mm-hmm.
of their heroes.
Yeah.
They don't have big events and then say, starting after this big event, we're going to reboot our universe.
Mm-hmm.
Marvel just takes characters, looks at their timeline, and says, well, obviously...
we're just going to nudge
yeah,
it a little.
We can't say that the Fantastic Four met the Beatles anymore, because
mm-hmm.
that's ridiculous. So, no, what they're doing with Captain America, or what Brubaker is doing
mm-hmm.
with Captain America is very, very interesting. The fact that, no, this Captain America was not around during the Vietnam War. The Marvel's pretty much saying, everyone who's a superhero has only been a superhero for about 10, maybe 5 years, depending on who they are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So,
as I was saying.
Although Brubaker does still acknowledge that Cap was Nomad, he just doesn't say when.
Exactly. So that's what a soft reboot means.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
yeah, there's this nebulous timeline for how long everybody, and it's... yeah.
Yeah,
classic.
So
yeah.
Because of this, a lot of older Marvel fans...
me?
were screaming that the characterizations were just off. Mark Miller hasn't worked on these characters except for
mm-hmm.
the Ultimate Universe.
Yep. And he made the ultimate versions of those characters, which are pretty much similar to these.
Yeah, so for older readers, the characterization was just way wonky, because Reed Richards just came across as, like, the biggest wimp ever, when, you know, he's one of the pillars of the Marvel Universe and has been for, like, over 30 years, or at least over 20 years. But here he's just so incredibly wishy-washy. And Tony Stark, yeah, as Nicole pointed out, as a new reader, she said, I'm taking this at face value, but it really feels like he's got something up his sleeve. Whereas the Iron Man books that were coming out during the Civil War were excellently written, with a Tony Stark that you could totally get behind, and he was a hero of his own book.
Mm-hmm.
But in Civil War, he was like, goddamn. I hate Iron Man.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because, like, everyone is the hero of their own story. I don't think Saddam Hussein pictured himself as the villain. Whereas he's...
I think some days he woke up and he twirled that mustache and he was like, oh yeah.
I like being evil.
Just occasionally.
Perhaps.
Occasionally.
I'll acknowledge the possibility
yeah.
of that.
I bet there are some days that Steve Rogers combed his hair to the left and was like, oh yeah, today I'm going to be evil. Just once, you know? Anyway.
Yeah. It was only in his own book that Iron Man appeared to be the hero. In all the other books, he's depicted as the villain because clearly you're supposed to, you know, root for the side of freedom.
I do have the understanding that in the beginning, they really did want it to be, like, even, like,
mm-hmm.
both sides were both legitimately,
mm-hmm.
you know, viable options. However, in some cases, the Registration Act got depicted to be so extreme
mm-hmm.
that it made the idea of it being balanced just kind of blew it out of the water.
Yeah.
Not naming my example, I'll save that for later.
I think the concept of the registration versus not is not necessarily, like, I could see how it could be even-handed to some degree of this concept of, you know, there are obviously superheroes in this world that are not safe to have running around fighting villains, because obviously they're hurting more than they're helping. And, you know, I can understand from that standpoint of being a superhero and going, I don't want to be blamed for the rest of my life for things that I had no control over. It's not my job to police the rest of the world. I think it's the length at which the registration side goes in order to win the battle that made me say, I can't be for this. I mean, the concept of saying you either become a government worker or you go to jail is a
in
little...
In a special prison.
In a special prison in another dimension, unable to ever leave.
Your family know that you're there.
Is extreme. I think it would have been more realistic to say if you're going to be a superhero, you either have to register and become a government worker and or you stop being a superhero
mm-hmm.
at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it became more and more extreme as the book went on, to the point where it's like, you know, they're making up fake superheroes, they're cloning dead ones. They're just making this big ridiculous thing of creating this army of superheroes instead of just saying, okay, either work for the government or stop doing what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I couldn't get behind it.
I can't get behind that. I think that if it had been more even-handed, though, there wouldn't have been an enemy. And I think the book definitely wants, and most of Miller's work,
mm-hmm.
there's a clear-cut enemy. He's not a guy that deals in shades of gray.
But I think in this book, because you're dealing with superheroes,
mm-hmm.
and you're dealing with a civil war between the world of superheroes, I think
mm-hmm.
it would have been more compelling and more interesting had it been more even-handed of, like, wait, who do I really believe? Like, if I was in this situation, what side would I choose? Because both are viable, understandable concepts, and if you're a superhero, you would always want to do what's best for all, but at the same time, does that mean giving up some of your personal freedoms in order to do what's best for everyone? I would find that much more interesting of a story, and you can still have the giant battles, you can still
right.
have that, but then it really becomes a struggle for the reader to say, wow, I really have to think about this, and I really have to look at my own moral code
mm-hmm.
and try and understand what side I would really root for.
There's a splash page in chapter 6. So we have Iron Man's side on the right, and we have Captain America's side on the left. On Iron Man's side, we have Bullseye. We have
yeah.
Venom.
Lady Deathstrike.
So it's kind of like, yeah, and those people are there because they know that they get to not be in a cell if they do this.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not really, so you have a side that is made entirely of people who are doing this out of their own conviction.
Mm-hmm.
And then
except for Punisher.
And Punisher because, you know, they hired bad guys.
Love that moment.
And then, but then, you know, on Iron Man's side, you have all these the villains that he's using, Sentry, who's schizophrenic, and then
there's nothing wrong with schizophrenia. Go ahead.
And then Bishop, who's like, yes, I grew up in a totalitarian future where all mutants.
Yeah.
So you're for this because I want to be on the winning side.
the two characterizations, and I mean, I realize this is like, I know that everybody here has their, you know, Iron Man's being portrayed poorly, and it's funny because this is kind of the first Reed Richards book I've ever read, so as far as I know, that's who Reed Richards is. But but Cable and Bishop in this book make no sense. The fact that they are even in here and the way that they show them throughout Civil War makes no sense whatsoever as far as their characters are concerned. And it just makes me, like, because I just look at Cable in every scene and I'm like, what are you doing there? Like, he never gives it any clear-cut reason, and there's nothing aside from the fact that he's...
it's in Deadpool and Cable.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah. Deadpool is pro-registration because they will be given more money.
Oh, that's what Cable decides to...
Yeah. But, you know, Bishop, they actually do manage to rationalize it enough that I could buy it.
But it still
is a little inconsistent.
Yeah,
but
it becomes...
in a separate book.
Yeah, and it also becomes contradicted by what happens in Messiah Complex. Because he would never be for something like this. But anyways.
Yeah.
Talking about other books now.
Exactly.
Different writers write different characters differently.
This is true.
Different.
Yeah, the other character that was supposed to represent the heart and soul of the Civil War was Sue Richards. And she does an amazingly uncharacteristic thing. She leaves her husband, but leaves her children with her husband.
Yeah!
She leaves her husband because she doesn't agree with what he's doing.
Fucking up, Reed.
And she's hoping that he can come to his senses, but I'm going underground now, but I'm going to leave my children with
in
you.
The hands of the monster that I just left.
Try not to clone the children, like your best right. friend Thor. But what I'm doing now is going to be too dangerous for you to...
Clearly Mark Millar has never left a monster.
Well, I don't know much about her character because they're not really characters I was ever interested in learning about.
And you hated the movie, so...
I've seen all of, like, 10 minutes of the movie and I hated what I saw, so... she gives a reason of why she leaves her children behind...
is it a good one, though?
Well, it's a reason that sort of makes sense, but knowing most mothers wouldn't matter that reason makes sense, because, yes, you, as a superhero who's going to fight for a rebellious side, and you know that there's going to be war and there's going to be casualties, you would be hesitant to bring your kids along. But I can't imagine that they don't have any friends or any people outside of what's going on. That
which
they
do.
They couldn't leave the kids with them. I would think he would go, okay, well, I know they're in a safe place. Even if I know where they are, I'm not going to go get the kids because obviously we're fighting a war and there's all this stuff going on. So she did the right thing. You're right. It doesn't make sense that she did that.
I'll just lock the kids in the negative zone, and I'll know where they are.
And no one can get in, and they can't get out.
Well, that'd be a great parenting technique. Imagine time out of the negative zone.
Don't play with a nihilist, kids.
The Fantastic Four are the first family of the Marvel Universe. They have friends and acquaintances all over them. They have friends on the moon, for crying out loud. And for Sue to just... Ah! That just drove
me
insane.
Or, I mean, the idea that I got is like, okay, leaving the kids there might help Reed reconnect with his humanity, but I guess to someone that's been reading for as long as you have.
But I don't think it's the fact that he's not connected with his humanity, because I think he's connected to his humanity. I just, no, but I can see because she makes a comment about, you know, reconnect with the kids and give them the attention they deserve or something like that. And it would make sense to maybe, like, oh, remember the reasons of why you're a superhero. It's about the kids. It's about, you know, take some time because I'm not here to take care of him. You'll have to, and he'll be forced to.
Man, that would have been a great miniseries.
But the issue becomes that she leaves him, and I get why she leaves him, but at the same time, even though I don't agree with, like, the cloning of Thor and all these things that is happening, I don't feel like he's a monster in this. Like, I feel like Tony Stark and a lot of them are coming up with these ideas, and they're running with them without thinking about the full repercussions, but I don't think anything that he's doing is, like, I fear for my kids' lives with him. So it's kind of a weird situation where it's like, I'm leaving you because I'm going into the underground because I'm actually going to fight you at some point because I don't agree with what you're doing. But I don't feel like she needs to take her kids with her. But at the same time, as a mother, most mothers would take their kids with them regardless. So.
Yeah, Mark Miller.
Learn to write women. It's also not likely that after they won and registration, like, was continuing and stuff, and he's all like, yeah, things are great here, and, you know, we're going to have Utopia, that she'd just walk back in and be like, hi, honey, I'm home.
War's over. I guess I don't have to go away anymore.
Yeah, there's still a problem that you don't believe in the same thing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It does wrap it up a little too nicely.
An interesting, another interesting aspect of the Civil War that really hit you over the head is that it's the first Marvel superhero class war as well. There's constant references to A-list heroes and C-list heroes. And when they have their 50-state initiative, they're creating an order and they're reusing names from existing heroes that are on the anti-registration side. And there's even a reference to calling one of the new heroes Hercules, because, you know, that was kind of a wink at DC, actually, because any comic company can have a Hercules. But yeah, the whole story was started by C-list heroes. So the thing is that Stark's mentality, or rationale, I should say, was about, we are going to train these C-list heroes. We're going to make them better than they are. Everyone's fighting the good fight, but some are loose cannons. And so, in order for the public to trust superheroes in general, we've got to reel them in. And by reeling them in, they've got to reveal their secret identities, and that's just the way it has to be.
And that's a fair
because
point.
I'm the richest man in the world, and everyone knows I'm Iron Man, so why can't this street-level hero do the same?
And that's...
But the thing that's really, really irritating about that is at the end, it's like, oh, wait, I'm Iron Man, and I'm the only one that's going to have access to all the names.
And that, for me, is why Iron Man is the ultimate villain of this story. How many lives could have been saved if at the very beginning he had said to Cap, oh yeah, I'm the only one who's going to have the list of names. Like, it's all going to be in my private files. Like, I'm Iron Man, and I'm the only one who's going to know. You all have to register, but it's just me who knows.
But I
dun, 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 dun.
And he's going to be the director of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Because I'm the only one that's going to know, because I'm the director of S.H.I.E.L.D. Anyway.
Yeah. Now, see, I feel that Cap would have probably trusted Nick Fury with everyone's identities. And if Nick Fury...
There's no Nick Fury in this book. But I do think that Cap probably would have trusted Nick Fury a heck of a lot more than he would have trusted Tony Stark with that information.
Fair enough. But it's like, if Tony Stark had gone to Cap and said... I'm going to be the new director of S.H.I.E.L.D. I'm going to be the only one with access to the files. If he'd said that right at the beginning, rather than just say, register or go to jail, the whole thing could have been avoided.
But I don't... Because when I was reading this, I still had the same thought process of, even if he had said, I'm the only guy that's going to have it. they're having that data in one place, no matter who has it, is just a Pandora's box of death that will be rained down upon the Marvel Universe
this
if it gets into the wrong hands.
Tony Stark deletes his brain after Secret Invasion, actually.
The heart of the story is Peter Parker, our beloved friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. He is the heart and soul of this Civil War, mm-hmm. because he trusts Tony Stark at the beginning of the story. At the time that this series came out, Spider-Man was an Avenger. He was on the payroll. He lived in the Avengers Tower, or whatever, Stark Tower,
mm-hmm.
with the rest of the Avengers.
Yeah, because the Avengers mansion was
there.
Tony Stark knew who he was. In fact, he was Peter was
mm-hmm.
Tony's assistant. And so Stark pushed Peter Parker to be the face of the Registration Act by unmasking publicly.
Exactly, manipulative dick.
Yes! This was a major milestone in the Marvel mythos. Whoa! That Peter, who was always seen as the everyman superhero, is taking a stand where he's publicly unmasking. He's putting his wife at the time and his Aunt May in danger, but he conferred with them in his own book. By saying, yes, I'm Peter Parker, and I've been Spider-Man since I was 15 years old. That was a major moment, especially for an old-time reader.
No, absolutely. It's like, that's one of the biggest kept secrets in, you know, the Marvel Universe, is who is Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, though, that's not what Registration was about. It wasn't about publicly unmasking.
Exactly.
And so for Tony to make one of his best friends, Peter, do that on national television, and Spider-Man, having one of the largest and most diverse rogues gallery that all want his blood.
Or the blood of his girlfriends.
Or the blood of his girlfriends. Or his Aunt May. Unbelievable dick move on Tony Stark's part.
Yeah, but then he will be just as friend and family-less as Tony is, so then it'll be okay.
And then they'll just hang out forever and be like, you know what, my life sucks. Yeah, mine sucks too, man. Good thing we're best friends.
Exactly.
Oh my god, I was so mad about that.
It's like, yeah, this piece did have a villain, and it was Tony Stark.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he was a saint.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it doesn't have a villain. I'd just say that if you make Registration and non-registration a little bit more even-handed, you lose Tony Stark as the villain.
See, I'd have liked to have seen a villain behind the pushing of the Registration Act. Like, oh, I mean, I'm pushing...
The Kingpin.
I was actually going to go with Norman Osborn based on future events.
Oh. Yeah, if
but
Osborn
he was
had been
super
one
jail.
Of the other people...
He was in super jail at the point.
Nah,
super
it should
jam.
Have been someone like Electro. That would have been the cream. It's a class war, and another very interesting thing is that with the exception of a Bishop on Tony's side, every single hero of ethnicity is on Cap's side.
Oh.
And that's...
Cage,
I never noticed that, but the
Patriot.
Mighty Avengers did look awfully white when they first appeared.
I don't know what point I was making with that.
No,
it's pretty
it's,
obvious.
It's... Yeah, no, I think it's, you know, Cap
Mark
represents
Miller
America.
Is nothing if not obvious.
Hey.
But what Nicole said earlier about, you know, finding your inner hero, that was a very important point. It's like, what kind of monster clones Thor?
Well, to those of our listeners who read the book, it's clearly Reed Richards.
Reed Richards, Tony Stark, Hank Pym, the pillars of the Marvel Universe.
The scientific minds of the Marvel
the
Universe.
Scientific...
Science bad.
What was that conversation like?
The most logical minds in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
No, if this was Dylan, if this was your first experience with reading Reed Richards.
I've read FF number one, and I read that. That is all I
read.
Reed
Richards is like, math says if we keep doing it this way, things will be bad.
Yeah.
It reminded me a lot of Superman, Red Sun, like the... What's his name?
Lex.
It reminded me a lot of Lex. Like, the two of them seemed like they were almost the same character. Everything they did, they were extremely smart and came to these conclusions in a very...
Lex as Lex and Reed, or Lex and...
Lex and Reed.
Okay. Fair enough.
They seemed like they were the same character coming from the same motivations, and, you know, they both are extremely smart, thinking what they're doing is the best thing, but everything they do winds up being really kind of shady and not work out right, you know, cloning Thor and then Thor killing people. Not really,
yeah,
not really
Mark
a good
Millar
move.
Similar characters in different books. Imagine.
Yeah, I mean, the characterization was just so off the charts. It's like, in what realm of logic would Reed Richards, Tony Stark, and Hank Pym ever think that it's a good idea to clone their best friend, who is an Asgardian god, and think that they can control him? It's like, ugh!
Yeah, I think the Thor cloning is a chapter that definitely does, like, just the logistics of the concept really got to me, although I do think the safe word is funny, but I don't know, like, that's one point. Well, there's a lot of points where the book does lose me. Like, I'm not saying this book is perfect. I really enjoy it, but it does suffer from certain things about having to be within a larger scope. And I think that if it had a little bit of a chance to rein itself in and really be a story unto itself, I would really enjoy it. But because it has, you know, we're going to tell this story over in this book, we're going to tell this story over in this book, you have this great build-up to what you're hoping for is a great ending, but winds up just being this sort of, oh, okay, that happened, because they're trying to get you to buy more comics.
Which is interesting, because I didn't really think of it that way when I was reading it, until I came to this page where, just after Spider-Man has revealed himself as Peter Parker, and it just felt like a giant piece of fan service to have all the little news people with mics, and comic book geek speak is one of the mics.
They're a well-respected podcast.
I didn't even notice that.
Which is great, but it really feels like this book is done because it's a piece of fan service, and it's like, wow, look at, you know, you have all your favorite characters all in one book. Like, it was a moment that kind of took me out of it, of like, okay, I guess this wasn't like a pre-planned, like, let's do this amazing story, and it made me go, oh, okay, I guess maybe it is just a, you know,
for the fans.
Buy our book because it has your favorite people in it, and, you know, buy this book because it has your favorite person in it. And
I guess we should talk about that.
Well,
what? The ending?
The ending.
Yeah, so that's where I was going to go next. The moment that makes Captain America change his mind, so he's got Tony on the ropes. He's about to give him a nice face full of shield.
Yep.
And he gets tackled
by... a killing stroke, if you will.
Two AMTs... a policeman, a firefighter, and three people
in blue.
And they say, this is what happens when you mess with New York and throw garbage at him. Oh wait, no, wrong movie.
You mess with one of us, you mess with all of us.
And so it's just so cheesy.
Because they're the real heroes.
Yes.
In this post 9/11 world.
Yeah.
And they are saying, because Cap makes a witty statement before about to whack.
No,
suck!
No,
shield,
no.
Stark! Something like that. Right. Well, the thing is that the Marvel Universe is basically New York.
Yeah.
All fights take place in New York. Manhattan, downtown, usually during rush hour.
Yep.
It's the rule.
The X-Men are from San Francisco now.
And Westchester.
They tried to...
to hang out at the Staples Center.
They tried... Many of the battles were apart from the populace. as possible. Abandoned warehouses, the negative zone, whatever. But the grand finale took place in downtown Manhattan.
Probably where it looked like.
Probably during rush hour or whatever.
It seems like it's during the twilight evenings, unless that's just all the explosions, because it kind of looks like
sunset. It's
no, they wouldn't be
golden
when,
view to it.
It's sunset.
Okay, all right.
So, it was a very, the superhero Civil War was a very public fight, and so, the end was just New Yorkers saying enough is enough, and it just ended so abruptly.
Cap goes, they're right, enough is enough.
See, I actually bought into that moment completely, because it's like he realizes that he stopped fighting for what he was originally meant to fight for. It's like he was fighting for the wrong thing, and he's like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
And like, as much as I was on Cap's side, I was like, holy crap, you're right. What are you doing? This is no longer what you started, wearing the mask in the first place for.
I think it makes, it makes sense, but it's, I always, from what I know of Captain America, it's, he's fighting for freedom, regardless of whether that be from government or from evildoers or whatever, and so it's one of those situations of, in this instance, he just happens to be fighting for his own freedoms, and, he looks around
and realizes... Which is interesting, because his identity has been made public before this point.
But it's not as much about being... I don't think it's about them, their names being known as much as it is of, I'm either a superhero on your terms or I'm in jail.
Yeah.
Which means I have no freedoms of any kind. And I think it's, for him, it's this moment of, self-sacrifice of, okay, well... I realize that this war that we're fighting for our freedoms is hurting the people I've spent the rest of my life trying to protect and trying to help with their freedoms. It's infringing on their freedom to live.
Yeah.
So he would rather sacrifice himself and the superhero people and their freedoms in order to save the freedoms of the average man. And which I think it fits in line with kind of his motto.
It just feels like
America.
It feels kind of
abrupt.
Okay. it's kind of sad, and there wasn't much of an ending of any kind. It's like, okay, well, he's out of the picture, and then, okay, so registration wins, and Iron Man's run around taking on 8 jobs at the same time, working for the president and working for this and that, and there's a small contingent of people who are underground still not registering or whatever, and that's it, and that's the way it is, and I'm like, okay, well... That doesn't seem like that. So, it feels like that's the end, and you're like, well, that can't be, because obviously...
There's got to be 8 more chapters to this.
Well, there's got to be 8 more chapters, but also, who wants a superhero world like that? That's a sucky superhero world. It takes away the reason that we love superheroes so much, because they are vigilante justice. I mean, we love our cops and our FBI or whatever, but, it's the concept that we wish that we could be that superhero, and we could be a superhero on our own terms and police ourselves and all of that, and then you take that away and you're like, oh, well, then it might as well be a book about cops, It's not as cool.
Well, the main reason I see for the pro-registration side winning in the end is because it creates a bigger change to the status quo. And the last few events that Marvel had been having were all about changing what the status quo was. Avengers is Assembled was the first one in 2003, just kind of turned things on its head. Then you had House of M, which Decimation, boom.
No more mutants.
No more mutants. And then this one, bam, registration. And then after, you know, secret invasion, bam.
Lots of scrolls.
After lots of scrolls, we have Norman Osborn is controlling everything, and this is why registration is bad.
Yeah.
Dark Avengers and Dragon Sun, or Wolverine Sun Dragon, not important.
Dakin.
Or whatever.
Dakin or whatever.
And then we have Siege,
Dragon.
Where we go back, and then Tony Stark is leader of S.H.I.E.L.D., and the registration act gets repealed in 5 seconds.
Yeah.
Actually, something I read is Marvel isn't so much about changing things, is that it's about the illusion of change.
Well, yeah.
Whereas DC is about pleasing their older fan base, which is, because DC fandom stretches back longer.
Jumping off of what Swan just said, as a longtime reader, and this was a combination of other things, this was the series that made me throw my hands up in the air and say, that's it, I quit. I didn't quit cold turkey. I drastically reduced the number of books that I wanted to read. I only focused on specialty books that weren't touched by the registration act. And here we are talking about it 5 years later. And it doesn't stick.
Yep.
None of it stuck. So it's like Black Goliath, a Z-list hero, was the martyr of Civil War. It's like, he just wanted to get rid of a Z-list hero. It's like, oh, Goliath's dead! Black Goliath? Yeah, that one! It was my best friend! This is for you, Bill! What was his first name again?
Bill Goliath!
Yeah, he was my best friend, that Bill Black Goliath guy! Without giving the detail that Swan gave, I just want to say that's the reason why I had to give up. Because none of it stuck.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I wasn't going to read it.
And
then the next event that came out pretty much said, oh yeah, those guys that did that thing weren't themselves. I won't spoil it, but it's like, yeah, Hank Pym, that wasn't... Hank Pym didn't do that. He wasn't even...
Hank Pym was on a spaceship somewhere.
Exactly. And Reed... He was being manipulated, and Tony Stark rebooted his brain.
deleted it, and his backup was from, like, a couple months before Civil War.
So the new Tony Stark, get this, people, the new Tony Stark is like, you guys can't be mad at me, because I don't remember doing all those things, so therefore, I would have never have done them.
No, actually, he does say that he would have done them.
But he basically says, don't be mad at me, because I don't remember doing that. I love comics, I really do. And I do read the message boards and the newsaramas and the CBRs, but I just can't buy into this stuff anymore because...
You're glad to read other people's criticism for free.
I felt like a total chump after, you know, like a few months after it, after this event. Mm-hmm. And Corey mentioned during our previous podcast that this was a 7-issue event that actually should have taken 7 months tops. It took a year. And so Marvel, because they wanted to be consistent with Steve McNiven's art, and I applaud them for that.
I applaud them for making sure that Steve McNiven got to finish out this book.
Yeah, they didn't use a backup artist. But the thing is that the scheduling was all off. I won't take this from the big two anymore. I just can't buy into these big events because they just don't stick. I mean, they're fun while you're reading them, but if you don't like your comics after you've finished reading them,
well, it's kind of like a soap opera. It's the same thing. Anytime you watch like, you know, a soap opera, it's like, oh, they died, but oh, they brought them back from life, or
it was all a dream.
It was actually their twin brother, or like it just becomes you can't get into it because you know anything that happens, anything that's like earth shattering is just.
What?
Not real.
Yeah. It'd take me a heck of a lot to get me to buy a big event tie-in. Unless it was X-Men, at which point I'm pretty much sold.
X-Men what? I'll buy it.
Exactly. Oh wait, does it have Wolverine's claws somewhere on the cover? Ooh, I'm in!
Yeah. You're so cute with that.
I know.
Because becomes very hard with DC and Marvel, especially for people who have not been reading it for long periods of time, that every time you pick up something, it's like the death of Batman or the death of blah, 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 or some big, you know, thing happens, but then they always come back to life, or someone takes their place and does the exact same thing they're doing, and nothing ever sticks, and so nothing's dramatic, nothing's, wow, that was amazing, it doesn't move me anywhere, because I know it's just going to keep going for another 30 years, and anything that they do try and make happen is going to be retro...
Retconned.
Retconned, or whatever you call it.
Retroactive continuity. Retcon. When 12-year-old Keith started collecting comics, I immediately gravitated towards the team-up books and the group books because I wanted to know as many heroes in the Marvel Universe as quickly as possible. And there were great opportunities for me to know some of these C-list characters. But at the time that I was reading them, I didn't think of them as C-list characters. Like, sorry, Black Goliath.
I love that book!
But the Civil War, like I said earlier, being the, you know, it was just all of these C-list and Z-list characters that got to stand a yard away from Captain America and Iron Man when normally they wouldn't be invited to that big table. And they all fought, but they fought publicly. And I agree with what Chris said. I got behind the ending. It's just that it happened so damn quickly. Where it's like the public said, you guys...
Stop fighting!
Look at the collateral damage. Buildings are falling down. You stop this. And I don't know. It's just it left a bad taste in my mouth. So
I waited for World War Hulk.
But I was gonna say, like, because I'm always looking for those stories that just kind of show what. You know, as far as what the superhero genre can give you. And I feel like Civil War, I mean, if anyone can give me another one, like, Civil War just seems like a really excellent example of sort of the Marvel Universe and everybody in it in one seven-issue story. And I think as an introductory book, I think it's a pretty darn good one. I think it at least succeeds at that in terms of showing you Spider-Man and Captain America and all of these heroes.
I think it, I mean, it shows you all these heroes, but it doesn't really give you a good indication of who they are to each other in the world. Because you have multiple characters changing sides all the time, and you have, you know, as you're saying, like, C and Z list characters that you have no idea who they are, or characters that weren't really around much at this time that they brought back just for the book, or, it doesn't give a good indication of who these characters really are in the grand scheme of the world. So, as an introduction to the Marvel world, I know that there's two sides, for and against, but I don't know why they're for and against, and I don't know if they half of these people have ever met each other before, or if they like each other. Or, you know, the only indication you get of that is the scene where they're all, like, they all meet up and they're talking before, like, the actual law gets passed. And there's a lot of, like, snide comments against each other of, like, you know, calling people shorty and, like, you know, just very, like, well, I've been around longer than you and, you know, all of this kind of stuff. And, but you don't get a sense of, like, oh, so-and-so and so-and-so go way back because of this, or, you know, there's just not a lot enough of that to really have it be an introduction to the Marvel Universe, except
it's
for
a standalone book.
there were some very good character moments. Sue at the beginning saying, Reed, you're talking about half our Christmas card list. That was a nice touch.
Yeah.
Oh, and the fact that, as you said, in the first issue, they all gathered for coffee, and hopefully Danish, at the Baxter Building, where the Fantastic Four, who have been public heroes since their inception.
They appeared, yeah.
So, yeah, the Fantastic Four has always been, like, the heart or the family of the family group of the Marvel Universe. But yeah, if you were just coming into this, you know, why is Spider-Man wearing three different costumes?
I did ask Dylan. I was like, why does he have these, like, pincer thingies? What are those? Because I've been familiar with a few of his costumes, but I was like...
You certainly had to buy other comics that had the Civil War banner on them to understand the backstories of these heroes. But the unfortunate thing for me, and this is just my opinion, is that a lot of really interesting runs of the main characters had to be interrupted. And some really good stories got totally sidetracked for a month or two or five because of the Civil War thing. And yet, it doesn't stick. So now those books are back on track again. I think Swan has something to say.
One thing about the Marvel Universe is that it has so much history that it's almost impossible to really give exposition for all the major players in a big event book. When you're talking about a big event book in comic books, you're not going to get character exposition. It's just not part of the media.
Okay, I have a question for the group. Do you think that big events like this actually bring new fans into the comic world, or do you think it's daunting for...
Yes, that's exactly what it did to me.
And Dylan, of course,
I was at the cynical point. And I mean, when I was reading comics, I was reading a few books that were in the main universe, but as soon as the Civil War banner started appearing, I said, no, you're not going to get my dollar. And I walked right away from it. And I, like I said, I was going to wait for the dust to settle, and I read just that, and then had some people hand me some other stories from Civil War, and I was like, oh, this is interesting. But this is the only thing that I've ever purchased of Civil War. I think that it certainly, I know a lot of people that got into Marvel continuity because of Civil War, but I also know a lot of people that jumped ship because of it. So I don't know how much of a trade-off there is and if they're actually killing their own fan base by doing events like this. But it does seem like it's a tactic that supposedly numbers-wise is working. So they keep doing it.
Well, I think it's also, maybe it's a question of moving, because this seems like something that might bring people who are... not avid comic book people, but are interested in the comic book genre, have read some of, you know, this, that, or the other thing when they were young or something, might go, I heard this is supposed to be good, you know, oh, it's got all these great characters that I've already been introduced to through comics when I was a kid, or through the cartoons, or through whatever, but as someone from a complete outsider to hear about this, there are so many characters in here that you have no clue who they are. So unless you're interested in Captain America or Spider-Man or Iron Man or something like that, and you're picking it up because you're interested in the fact that they're main characters, I'm not sure this would necessarily bring someone from the complete outside in just for this. Partially because if they're not already reading comics by Marvel or DC and one of these events happens, they're probably going to go, well, I don't want to buy 20 books in order to read. I'm not big enough into comic books to do that, but it just seems like a ploy. It's not a bad read, though. For me, it read easily. I understood the gist of what was going on. The fact that I didn't know half the characters didn't necessarily bother me.
I think it's an accepted part of the medium that when you're going to jump in, it's like you kind of just have to dive in and go, okay, I'm going to find out what I can while I go. Like, it's just letting the stream take you where it's
going. Well, and that's true. I mean, that for me, that's pretty much every comic book, because I don't really know who this is.
Yeah.
But...
Oh, which was worse? X-Men or this?
Which was worse?
Yeah, Messiah Complex, or just in terms of, like, dealing with the sheer volume of characters.
Probably X-Men, only because I feel like the deaths and different things that happened in X-Men were supposed to be emotional, and they were supposed to be big deals, and I didn't have a clue who these people were.
No, Caliban!
I'm fine.
It felt like there was a lot more purposeful exposition and purposeful story going on, whereas this felt like a very kind of general overview. This is where these people stand, this is where these people stand, let's get recruits and then we're going to fight.
Mm-hmm.
So it didn't bother me because I was like, okay, it's kind of like gang warfare. It's just like, you know, who has the more numbers and who cares about what, and then fight and then we're done.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas X-Men, it was, you know, there are none of us left, we're going extinct, and then there's this lost baby, and there's a lot of other, like, side stories that are going on where it's like, if you don't understand who these people are to each other, or, you know, why someone's doing something, it gets kind of confusing. Whereas here it's just like, well, I know who Captain America is, and I know who Iron Man is, so I know they're on opposite sides, and their teams are fighting each other.
And go.
Yeah. And go. So, but yeah, I do agree that it, while it works and I get what was going on, it definitely does lack a lot in, when it comes to being a standalone book. And, but it wasn't a horrible read. It wasn't like, I hated it.
Yeah. Should we talk about the art before we go?
The art is amazing. I want everything to be drawn by Steve McNiven.
Spider-Man's Iron Spider face looks a little weird sometimes and really reflective, and it's just weird. Other than that, it's pretty good.
The one thing, I think that Steve McNiven does a great job in terms of photorealism while still looking like a comic book. Like, it's beautiful stuff. I love his art a lot. The only thing that's lacking to me with his work is the fact that he doesn't change his layouts. They're always horizontal striped panels, and they just go down the page, down the page. And you'll get a little section where there's, like, maybe four or five little panels, but, like, he has a very rigid, like, widescreen rectangles to pretty much everything. And splash pages.
Which is funny because I've heard you say in private conversations that you would love to see Civil War as a movie.
I would.
And
that was
he...
a private conversation.
No, I would. And I think that it lends
dark
it...
secrets revealed.
No. I would love to see this as a movie.
And
I'm secretly waiting for the day that this gets to happen.
And I feel that his panels lend to that. It's almost like reading a movie.
Agreed. It is like reading a movie. But what I would like from my comic books is to not read a movie. Like, I think this is an amazing script for a Marvel movie that we'll never get to see. And I would like to see a little bit more variation from Steve McNiven's breakdowns than just rectangle, rectangle, rectangle. Like, it's
whatever
it's
happened
all...
to the star panels.
Right, whatever happened to star wipes in comics. I mean, it's just wrong.
I think
maybe the occasional circle panel in the middle.
I circle panel.
I think, I mean, I'm a big fan of the no panel, personally, so...
Mm-hmm.
I do think that the panel layout, it doesn't lend itself to being very, like, three-dimensional. You don't see anyone, like, kind of coming out of a panel, or... things that we as a group have said that we enjoyed in other books,
mm-hmm.
of the really interesting things that they do with panels or with, you know, text bubbles or whatever, is not something that this is very straightforward and very, for all the action that's going on in there, I feel like it's kind of cut down a little bit and you feel kind of very, the world is this big, instead of feeling like it's the epicness that is supposed to be going on. The art was actually pretty good. It is... it is photorealistic to some degree, and that's kind of... I think the the shadow, the light and dark is mm-hmm. what I liked the most of the fact that it has a very wide range of colors.
Yeah, can we get the colorist's name? Because credit where credit is due.
Yeah.
I just gave Dexter Vines and Steve McNiven.
Inkers, Dexter Vines with Mark Malala, Steve McNiven, John Dell, and Tim Townsend.
Oh, wow.
Maury Hollowell?
Maury Hollowell, that guy.
Yeah.
You do good color, Maury Hollowell.
Seriously.
It's got such a wide range of colors and...
It's got a natural palette.
Yes, it's a very natural palette, and it's really nice to see, because so many comics have kind of a wash of, like, three colors or... Mm. Just kind of scheme going throughout most of it, and this one is very, you know, sometimes it's day, sometimes it's night.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of
sunsets.
Like really interesting, like shine on like backgrounds or on their costumes. So it makes it feel a little bit more real.
The redness of the fight at the at the warehouse. And then when Thor comes in, it's this big blue.
Yeah.
And so that's just a really stark contrast.
Yeah, it's very, like, it's almost metered by color.
Like,
if you look through it and see kind of where red and blue are used throughout in terms of its motif.
This was my first experience with Steve McNiven's art, and it was pretty awesome. And, yeah.
Is it the reason you haven't set fire to the book?
No, the art was amazing. I mean, he's, you know, he draws
good.
Yeah. Mm. He made Captain America's boots look comfortable. And stylish. He chose to draw them as bell bottoms, which really worked, because Captain America's boots are pretty weird. They're like fireman boots. Or pirate boots.
They're like pirate boots.
Yeah.
They really are. They're buccaneers.
Yarr, I be Captain America.
But they're also like, fireman
roles. I would say more like swashbuckler boots. Not necessarily pirates.
But he decided to go with that, you know, Starenko, let's just make the flap huge. I mean, totally doesn't work for stealth, but...
Yeah.
But I digress. Yeah. No, Stephen Niven's art was... This was my first experience, and yeah, I would certainly... Read. I don't know what else he's done. So
Old Man Logan.
Oh. Guess we'll be reviewing that one day.
In a future date.
Future date.
I guarantee it.
I don't know what to say. His art's great.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, my only complaint about McNiven's art is the fact that, well, I have two complaints about McNiven's art. One, the rectangular panels. And two, it takes him a long time. But that's not a criticism of the work itself.
It takes a long time because it's amazing. He has to make sure it's amazing.
I think my favorite panel, and it's a small panel, it's not something cool. That's my favorite. But this panel where Tony Stark is sitting in a building, and he says, "Oh God, please let us be doing the right thing here." And you can see the reflection on the glass of the buildings all around him.
Mm.
The lights from all the other buildings.
That is really cool.
And I thought that was a really... Because you don't see that in a lot of superhero comics. To go to that detail of, you know, hey, there's a window here. Instead, it's, you know, just someone sitting and you don't necessarily see that there's all this other world outside.
Yeah, so go Maury Hollowell. And get the...
No, it's very cinematic.
Yeah.
But with a lot of, there's a tightness to it.
Mm-hmm.
The tightness and the close-ups just help make the dynamic shots more striking. But,
it's so beautiful to look at. It's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah. I can't really comment on something that's so beautiful. Anything I say just...
That it makes angels weep.
I do have to say this... This panel of Cap always makes me laugh. just the big open mouth.
No, it's like,
it looks like his eyes like twitching.
What's great about that panel is that it looks like he took a snapshot of someone yelling Cap was saying. And it's like, not everything looks perfect.
Yeah. Any closing statements, arguments? Is anybody now pro-registration, or...
Never.
In theory, registration works, but I shall forever be on the side of Captain America.
I'd just be on the side of Cap because he's Cap.
Exactly.
He's got my vote.
Black Liar!
Iron Fist secretly masquerading as Daredevil.
Alright, so thank you for joining us. Next month's book will be Earth World, which was Swan's pick. We are going away from
by
the...
Rob Bader and James Noguchi?
Jamie Noguchi?
Yes.
And so that was Swan's pick. We're going away from the capes and tights and going towards independent, and we are going so independent that we are on the internet. It's actually a webcomic.
It was originally a webcomic. After months and months of not being able to actually release their book, they finally released their book, and they finally sent one to me. And through some weird thing, I somehow have three copies.
So that's our next book, with press copies that they don't even know about. But yeah, so if you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email at comicbookofthemonth@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at cbotmp. Facebook is facebook.com/comicbookofthemonth, and you can leave us a voicemail at 424-CBOT-MP5. Once again,
I am Swan.
Nicole.
Chris.
E.
And I'm Dylan. This episode has been kindly sponsored by Two Cats, whether they know it or not. And yeah, so Earthworld next month. We will see you then. You can try to tip the scales, but time presides at trial. No way to win. No way to win. No way to win this very, very civil. You belong, you belong, you belong to the Merry Marble Marching Society. March along to the song of the Merry Marble Marching.